Barely 5 feet tall and a towering champion of women's rights, her fans called her Notorious RBG.
We'll look back on the life and legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I'm Scott Simon.
I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro, and this is Up First from NPR News.
Justice Ginsburg died at her home in Washington, D.C. last night of complications from metastatic pancreatic cancer. She was 87.
And there's already a battle over who will succeed her and when on the Supreme Court.
With the election ahead, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell vows they will vote on whomever President Trump nominates, and the president has a long list of names.
So stay with us for more on Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the future of the Supreme Court.
People ask me sometimes, when will there be enough women on the court? And my answer is, when there are nine.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg's intelligence, grit, and wit made her unusually popular for a Supreme Court justice. Last night, people gathered at the court to mourn her.
Just so inspiring. She was the reason why my mom is the woman she is today and the reason I'm who I am today.
I just wanted to pay respect to an icon, an American hero. And I don't think there's one person from Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal who is... Everyone's of the same opinion that we've lost a great American tonight.
Jack Connelly, and before that, Olivia DeBorvo among the crowd on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court last night. NPR Justice Correspondent Carrie Johnson joins us now. Carrie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Scott.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a national figure as the second woman to be confirmed to the court, but she had a long and important legal career before that.
Absolutely. It was really a career of firsts. She was the first tenured woman to teach at Columbia Law School, a trailblazer, an architect for women's rights, the first director of the ACLU Women's Rights Project. And Scott, she used the law carefully, sometimes in cases, early cases involving men as the plaintiffs, to upend society's rigid views of gender roles. And of course, as you noted, she went on to become the second woman to serve on the Supreme Court.
What are some of the judicial opinions she wrote that stand out to you?
The first that really stands out is one of the earliest, her ruling in 1996 on Virginia Military Institute. That, of course, used to be an all-male institution. Justice Ginsburg wrote the majority opinion in a vote of 7-1. She said the VMI admissions policy that barred women from the school, which had support from the state, was unconstitutional. She said women deserved genuinely equal protection under the law. And then, of course, there were many times when Justice Ginsburg found herself on the losing side of the battle in dissent. Here's what she said about her dissents.
Both disappointed and hopeful, because some of my favorite opinions are dissenting opinions. I will not live to see what becomes of them, but I remain hopeful. So, of course, you wish that you could twist someone's arm and get one more vote when it's a 5-4 vote, but you do the best you can to make your side as persuasive as you can.
Any thoughts about which of her dissents might be remembered the most?
In this election year, it's hard not to think about the Ginsburg dissent in the big voting rights case from 2013, that Shelby County v. Holder. The court majority led by John Roberts invalidated a key part of the Voting Rights Act. That law, of course, had given the federal government advance notice and a chance to object to election-related shenanigans in places with a history of discrimination. Justice Ginsburg said that was short-sighted, like getting rid of your umbrella in the middle of a rainstorm, and we may be about to undergo a rainstorm in the 2020 election, Scott.
I got to ask you about that nickname, Notorious RBG. What did she have to say about that?
She was a genuine cultural phenomenon, the subject of two movies, a famous workout that was adopted by television hosts, and maybe you at one time or another, Scott.
As a matter of fact, yes.
T-shirts on a shop nearby my apartment bear her name. The thing is, at first, Justice Ginsburg said she wasn't sure how to take all that attention, but she came to embrace how much she meant to people and to really have fun with it.
She was asked this question over the years, so I'm going to pose it to you. How do you think she may want to be remembered?
Yes, really as a pioneer and trailblazer for women's rights and human rights. And in the minds and hearts of her colleagues, John Roberts said last night she was a figure of historic stature, a tireless and resolute champion of justice. She's mourned by many, especially the many generations of clerks who worked under her at the court.
And of course, the new Supreme Court term starts in 2 weeks. What will the makeup of the court look like without Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
This is going to be very different. The court is now going to have 8 members at least for a while, and tie votes, 4-4 votes, mean the lower court ruling stands. As we've seen in recent history, the court, when it's down a member, may try to decide cases in the most narrow and non-controversial ways possible, if that's possible.
NPR Justice Correspondent Carrie Johnson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Shortly after news broke of Justice Ginsburg's death, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced that the Senate will vote on President Trump's nominee to replace her. Now, Trump hasn't chosen anyone yet, but he does have a list of candidates, and he recently added some names to it, such as Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
So the balance of the Supreme Court is even more central to November's elections and the presidential campaign. Let's start talking about that with NPR congressional correspondent Kelsey Snell. Kelsey, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Did Senator McConnell offer any additional details on how he plans to handle the confirmation hearings and the votes on any replacement for Justice Ginsburg?
He did not give any sort of a timeline. He simply said that the nominee, whoever that person is, will get a vote on the Senate floor. You know, this is part of a broader goal for the Senate that McConnell has talked about frequently. He has pledged to remake the federal bench, and they've approved more than 200 judges since Trump took office. Now, if President Trump announced a nominee, say, on Monday, it would still likely take weeks, if not months, to move a nomination through the entire process. There's a whole vetting process that needs to happen, and typically in the times before the coronavirus, that meant individual in-person meetings between the nominee and basically every senator. And, you know, then there will be hearings, and it could easily stretch until after the election.
Notably, in 2016, Senator McConnell blocked President Obama's nominee to replace Justice Scalia, who died in February that election year. How does he explain, or does he, vowing to approve Trump's nominee now, before she or he is even known, with just 6 weeks to the election?
Now, McConnell was very explicit about this. He said in his statement that the difference is that there was a divided government in 2016 and that his party, Republicans, were elected in that year to confirm a president's nominees, and then they expanded their majority in the Senate in 2018. And he says that moving forward with a nominee would be simply following through on that promise. And he is getting support from some key senators, as you mentioned. Senator Ted Cruz is also one of the people on the list potentially to be one of the nominees from President Trump, but also from Senator Martha McSally, who is up in a very difficult reelection bid in Arizona. And he's also getting support from other Republican leaders who are essentially repeating his exact phrasing about why they would move forward. You know, the issue of the Supreme Court is really going to energize both sides of this, conservatives and liberals who want to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg with a nominee who backs their particular judicial philosophy. And this has energized Democrats tremendously. Donations are already pouring in. Democrats' online fundraising platform took in more than $20 million in just a few hours last night.
Of course, Republicans control the Senate, but are there any Republican senators who might disagree with what Senator McConnell is proposing?
A lot of that comes down to who the president nominates. You know, there are two senators who are most likely to disagree here, and that's Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine. They're both pro-choice, and they both expressed some skepticism in the past about voting for a Supreme Court nominee this close to an election. That said, you know, opinions can change depending upon who's nominated. And it would be a serious test for some Republican senators who are up for re-election in swing states or, you know, in otherwise tough re-election bids. People like Cory Gardner of Colorado and Tom Tillis of North Carolina. But I would note that most of those senators in this position tend to be very loyal to the president when it comes to actually voting.
Confirmation battles for Supreme Court nominees in recent years have frequently been contentious. And of course, this comes so close to a contentious election. What kind of pressure do you think will be brought to bear on the Senate going ahead?
there will be tremendous pressure because there's a huge political risk here. The White House and control of the Senate lie in the balance in November. You know, Democrats are already discussing eliminating the filibuster if they take the Senate and the White House, and that accelerated it rapidly overnight. And liberal groups like Demand Justice are already saying that any nominee from President Trump would be fundamentally illegitimate. And conservative groups are saying that the court must be at full strength before the election.
NPR's congressional correspondent, Kelsey Snell, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And to that presidential campaign now, where the Supreme Court is taking its place as an issue right alongside the economy, health care, and the pandemic.
President Trump has his short list for a vacancy, but Joe Biden says not so fast. NPR political correspondent Asma Khalid is here with more on that. Hi.
Hi there.
You spent yesterday traveling with Joe Biden, so let's start there. What did he say when he learned of Ginsburg's death?
Well, Lulu, he got word of this news, I should point out, just as all of us did who were traveling with him yesterday, and that's on a plane ride from Minnesota back to Delaware. The news actually broke mid-flight. When we landed, he delivered a brief statement. He referred to Ruth Bader Ginsburg as a beloved figure who overcame a lot of obstacles as a woman in the legal field and ended up being on the highest court where she could lead the effort to provide equality for women in every field. You know, he also reminisced over the fact that he feels like it's hard to believe that he was actually the person who presided over her confirmation hearing. But he did also speak about the political implications of all of this and the need he feels to wait until after the election to fill the vacancy.
Let me be clear that the voters should pick the president and the president should pick the justice for the Senate to consider.
Joe Biden said that this was the position of Republican senators back in 2016, and at that point, there were nearly 10 months before the election, and now we're less than 2 months away, and early voting has actually already begun in a couple of states. I should point out that President Obama also issued a similar statement, again referring to the fact that this is the principle that the Republican Senate set, and they need to be fair and consistent, and the legitimacy of the courts, he feels, the legitimacy of rule of law is at stake.
President Trump also spoke last night. What did he say?
Well, the news broke while he was in the middle of delivering one of his airport campaign rallies. He was also in Minnesota. He reacted with surprise when reporters asked him about Ginsburg after he left the stage. He said it was the first he had heard of it.
She led an amazing life. What else can you say? She was an amazing woman. Whether you agreed or not, she was an amazing woman who led an amazing life.
And later, the White House put out a formal statement, and President Trump referred to her brilliant mind and powerful dissents. He also said that she demonstrated you can disagree with someone without being disagreeable. The White House has also lowered its flag to half staff.
President Trump has been preparing for this possibility. Asma, what do we know about who Trump could choose to replace Ginsburg?
Well, earlier this month, the president did release this updated list of names of people he would consider for the Supreme Court. Some conservative judges from lower courts are on that list, but also some polarizing figures in the Senate, like Senator Tom Cotton and Ted Cruz. That list, I will say, Lulu, of course, is going to be getting some additional scrutiny. But as of last night, President Trump did not give any signal on what he intends to do immediately, and the White House has declined to comment.
But this is going to change the shape of the campaign, surely.
I imagine it will. You know, we have all known for a while that the courts have been a galvanizing force for the right. I think there are really a lot of unanswered questions for what this might mean for Democrats and how much it could potentially fire up Democrats. You know, as we've been hearing, it's not just any Supreme Court justice who died. This was a woman who was really an icon on the left. The group Indivisible, which is credited with really helping Democrats win back the House during the 2018 midterms, said that they feel like this will potentially motivate a lot of Democratic women. They saw that when Brett Kavanaugh was appointed just about a month before the midterms in 2018. That was a really potentially, you know, galvanizing force for people. And as of now, you know, it's too soon, I think, for them to say, but they do have and they are tracking a number of vigils that will be honoring Justice Ginsburg in some of the key states where Senate seats are going to be at stake this fall.
That's NPR political correspondent Asma Khalid. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Ozma Kelsey and Carrie are all regulars on the NPR Politics podcast. You can check that out and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And that's Up First for Saturday, September 19th. I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon. Up First is back Monday with news to start your week. In the meantime, you can follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter, and you can keep an ear on this feed for occasional special episodes.
And you can hear more about the Supreme Court on the air. We've got that and a former Surgeon General on eroding trust in America's public health experts and some good books and music on Weekend Edition.
Yep, every Saturday and every Sunday morning, you can find your NPR station at stations.npr.org.
Did you know that NPR has a Spanish language podcast? It's called Radio Ambulante. We tell the stories that make Latin America come to life. Amazing, unexpected stories, like lost gold in the Caribbean or playtime under quarantine or a life rediscovered after a bout of amnesia. Our new season has it all. New episodes every Tuesday starting September 15th. Listen now to the Radio Ambulante podcast from NPR.